Helping Hand, weekly feature, HPR 1 stations statewide, and then archived online at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Friday afternoon's Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to folks with disabilities and others among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence. Thanks for listening. This week, we are learning about the IHS, Institute for Human Services. That is one of the leading organizations in the effort to help the homeless in Hawaii. And we have had, for the last several years, the most severe homeless crisis per capita. And there has been some movement in the last point in time count, even in the stubborn Honolulu area where this crisis is so massive. It looked like there was some reduction. And this is a great organization to actually touch base on where things are at and how their programs are working, because that's really what they're on the front lines of. Kimo Carvalho is a name that you might hear in the news because he's a spokesperson for IHS. He's been our guest before on Helping Hand, and we're honored to have him back on right now. Great to see you, Kimo. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And this is, first, before we get into some of the obvious progress and changes and stuff over the last year, with so many homeless service providers in Hawaii, and often in the news, right, folks hear different names, different nonprofit, this group, that group, stuff that they're doing. Describe what you see as setting IHS, Institute for Human Services, apart or making it unique.
Sure. Well, the first thing is we are exclusively the only homeless service provider across the state of Hawaii that is, you know, our only business is to serve homeless people. There are many other nonprofits out there, and they all do amazing work, but their spectrum of services really do serve a lot of the poor, people who are maybe at risk of homelessness or pre-homeless, or maybe they have other programs that, you know, kind of generate more of their revenue, and homeless services is just sort of one of the many programs that they offer. But for us, we are exclusively Hawaii's oldest, largest, and most comprehensive homeless service provider, and we are working to end and prevent homelessness across the state of Hawaii.
So you guys are on all the other islands too?
We actually have partners on the other islands. So, you know, in terms of partnerships, so if there is a provider on the neighbor island, say right now in Big Island where there's the lava flow, we have a lot of people who need airline relocation assistance. And so we're able to offer them a little bit of a subsidy and some of our funding just to help them out. So we do collaborate quite well with all the other neighbor island providers.
Okay. And one of the big new things last time you were on, before we get into the point in time count, everything relates to it, actually. Everything is interconnected. But the Sand Island Center, which had been like this big thing and an innovative approach, too, because as you were pointing out, yeah, there are a lot of different people tackling the problem, but the problem is so massive, it kind of needs a lot of people tackling it.
Yeah.
And a lot of creativity and a lot of thinking outside the box. What's an update on that place and how things are going there?
So Halemaliola is a housing navigation center. It's one of the many new shelters that you probably hear about, you know, across the state. And this one is really unique because it really offered a niche to our community that didn't exist. So for the first time, we are now able to serve homeless with pets. Homeless who live in their cars and couples. And, you know, oftentimes, like, you know, our emergency shelters, we have men's shelters and women's shelters and family shelters. And we always kind of thought, well, you know, there's a lot of couples without children, and there's also people with pets now. And, you know, we needed a niche for our community to really offer, you know, services and not separate people or not refuse someone because they had an animal. So the good news is Halemaliola has been extremely successful in navigating, you know, over 300 people off the streets in just the short amount of time that it's been operating. In fact, we're expanding the facility. We have, I think, now 6 new containers with about 30 new units for both couples and singles. And we have more restroom facilities. And so it really is a true success. And, you know, the state government offered the lease to the city government for another 3 years, so we'll be around for a little longer.
And how many, with the 30 new units, it brings the total to what?
So it's just about 120 units in total.
20 units.
Yeah.
And what other new things have happened with IHS? You were on about a year ago. It was right around now in early June, mid-June of 2017. What other new things before we get into the point in time count do you want to highlight?
So just to build on Halemaliola, you know, I think one of the things we're trying to do at IHS is to modernize our shelter facilities to become a little bit more specialized. Homelessness has evolved so much over the last few decades. You know, if you were to ask me, you know, 30 years ago, what type of homeless clientele there were on the streets, you'd have probably somebody who wasn't as chronic, wasn't as addicted to, you know, drugs, and maybe had a little bit more, ability to make decisions for themselves. Today, we have so many different homeless subpopulations. We have homeless veterans. We have medically frail people who are discharged from the hospitals. We have addicts who need recovery. We have homeless with pets, homeless who live in their cars. There's so many different types of homeless subpopulations that we needed to modernize and diversify our facilities to be more specialized. And so, you know, in addition to Hale Maliola, we also have Tutu Birds Homes. These are specialty shelters for medically frail discharged from hospitals like Queens and Castle Medical Centers. We also have the Kalihi'uka Recovery House for homeless addicts who, when they're discharged from the hospital, they're given the opportunity to actually choose their treatment program, and they need a place to actually heal and recover. If you're on the streets, you're going to just continue to do drugs even though you want to get off of it because you're influenced by a lot of your peers. So we needed to have specialized facilities to really kind of build a community and help everyone, you know, get through their issues together. So we have a lot of new facilities, 8 in total, and that has been a lot of work in a year. And, you know, we're not stopping. We actually, you know, to really meet the demands of our community, we really do need to expand and offer a lot of specialized shelters, a lot of housing opportunities and options, and a lot of support services. It just doesn't stop on the streets. It's also after they get into housing, we need to make sure they stay in housing.
Right, because you got to maintain it. It's like you get that big lift, and then the lift really.
Right, and you know, you're talking about the point in time count. You know, homeless providers, we do a great job at moving thousands of people off the streets every year. But the real problem is that more people keep falling into homelessness at a larger rate than we're moving them out. So when we talk about a point in time count, you know, we are celebrating, of course, you know, some successes in the fact that there has been a slight reduction, and that is because homeless providers are now well more coordinated and able to identify someone right away and immediately pair them up with some kind of shelter or case manager or something that's going to get them into housing. But at the same time, what we're not doing is we're not looking. The state of Hawaii does not have a policy currently to prevent homelessness, and we need to slow down that pipeline. You know, there needs to be leadership at the top level to really work across different departments and administrations to make sure that there's a systematic policy to really slow that pipeline of a lot of people falling into the system.
The while there was an actual drop in the number of homeless people in the Honolulu area too, and lots of good stuff around the state in terms of that point in time count, mental health, Kokua were just on, and they said Hawaii still has that number one state for homelessness per capita. Is that, that's your reading of the statistics as well?
Correct. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, we are still in a crisis. We want to celebrate successes, but there's still a lot more work to do. You know, particularly, you know, for like our mental health system, you know, we still do not have a coordinated mental health system. Our public right now advocates for people's human rights to actually refuse treatment. So if I were to go on the streets right now and I were to offer someone with severe mental illness psychiatric medication, which we do offer them, they don't know they're sick, and so they refuse treatment. And we as a community have to respect their human rights to refuse that treatment, even though they don't know they're sick. Addiction, mental health, these are neurological diseases that is making people impaired to the point where they cannot make decisions. But we as a community, our laws have not caught up to the evolution of medical treatment. And so there is still, just even in that little world, a lot of work to do. You know, we do have laws in place, such as assisted community treatment laws, where we can go to court and we can advocate on, you know, the client's rights to have guardianship and take over their rights to treat them.
Right.
But we have not been successful because our courts and the public defender's office does not agree with taking away their right to refuse.
And it's so weird because some of the cats, there's like this little frail Asian lady covered in dirt right outside the station a lot who you probably...
That's actually who I was thinking of. I was just saying
right, that, and it's like, how can they not say that she should come off the street?
Right.
How can anyone look at her, you know, and not think she needs, someone has to selflessly look after her best interest because she is not capable of doing it. But somehow that you're saying our system here, so that case has been challenged and the law has said, no, you can't take her off the street.
Yeah. You know, there is a client, a lot of people know her. Actually, you know, I graduated from high school here in Honolulu in 2002, and I'll never forget, you know, I always used to transfer to my bus at the bus stop on the corner of Alakea and Hotel Street. And she used to always be right there. She used to defecate and urinate on herself. She used to yell. She had very, you know, erratic psychiatric episodes. And I'll never forget, you know, that was when I was in high school. And here we are, you know, two
decades
later.
This is the same person?
Same person that we've tried to take to court, you know, now five times. You know, 3 years ago, we took it to family court, petitioned it, and we had to keep tweaking the law at the state legislature just to get them to, you know, understand that there needed to be some checks and balances.
Does she have family?
She does have family, but the family does not want to take responsibility. And there are a lot of people like that in this community.
And that's the same woman that I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, still to, you know, just a couple weeks ago, you know, was our fifth time trying to go back to family court. And, you know, the public defender looked at and said, you know, do you want treatment? She said, no, I don't need it. Despite her meeting every single criteria and having, you know, a lot of substantial evidence and, you know, diagnoses around
her mental.
And
she looks worse. She does not. She looks, you know, I just saw her the other day and thought she's not, she's looking worse. You know?
So, you know, if you were to ask me, you know, two decades ago, you know, psychiatric treatment had negative side effects. And we did go from maybe being a little too loose in our laws and now becoming so restrictive that we went from giving people so much rights to now giving them no rights at all. And we now need to come back to the middle where we have to balance, you know, our compassion with promoting responsibility and opportunity to access treatment. And, you know, we're just talking, Dave, about one issue amongst many homeless subpopulations. Right. There's not just the mentally ill. There's also the homeless addicts that are chronically homeless.
That's true.
There are a lot of transient homeless people. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of working homeless. There are homeless families with children. There are just so many homeless subpopulations, and there's so many different policies and systems that need to be fixed. So while we do celebrate, you know, our coordinated entry system and being able to more systematically move people off the streets a little bit more efficiently, and we did see some progress in the point in time count reflected in that, there is still a need to fix a lot of system policies causing homelessness.
I mean, is that part of what your ask is for people? Is, I mean, like, what can people besides spending money on giving you guys donations so you can do eight facilities more or whatever it takes the next year, help get transfer folks through this new facility at Sand Island. People can volunteer as part of it. But it is it also trying to get a message out there, like a policy change kind of message? I mean, you tell me, what can we do to help? Because it's a dire, and I, you know, it's very dire knowing that having, you know, you just put a whole, I mean, this.
It's a reality.
Yeah, like, I mean, the thing I've just been seeing since for a long time now, I think
of. You have context to it.
Yeah, and it's just, it's mind-blowing context. So what can we do to, what do you want to tell people? You know best, what you think you should tell people who are listening?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing I ask everyone to do is just start by being educated about the causes of homelessness and the solutions that really work effectively to get people off the streets. You know, just us having this dialogue right now about identifying, you know, the problem and really talking about what causes that problem and the barriers to getting this person help and what solutions exist. And, you know, on the solution side, we, you know, do have a specialty shelter dedicated for people needing psychiatric assistance. And those are only for people, though, who actually accept psychiatric treatment. So this is because our homeless outreach team on the streets have developed a relationship with a mentally ill person
so
for 20 years. So there's
trust.
Right. Yeah. And so when they bring the psychiatrist there and they say, look, you know, this will really help you, that actually results in some kind of action. And we have seen success. But, you know, we do have a specialty shelter for that. But what do we need, you know, after education? Yeah, you know, we do need funding to operate a specialty shelter like that. The government doesn't give us, you know, financial resources to do this type of innovative work.
So maybe people who are touched by these specific psychiatric crises could say, I'd like to make a donation earmarked towards you developing more facilities for these people who are heavily impaired.
And if you, you know, if anybody out there is able to watch Prescribing Hope, which is a half hour mini documentary special that we worked with Holy News Now on, we invited Allison Blair to, you know, shadow our first psychiatric street medicine team in the state of Hawaii. and they shadowed them every Wednesday for 6 months, and they, you know, observed these moments where, you know, we had Ben, who was, you know, he has schizophrenia, and he would cope with his schizophrenia by using meth. And when he used meth, he would be able to hear music better, and he was playing music, and that's how he coped with his mental illness. So it was a dual diagnosis where you have both drugs and a mental health problem, and it exacerbated to the point where he was on the streets for a decade. And, you know, prescribing hope shows us, you know, just the advances of what the medical treatment was able to do in terms of getting rid of his schizophrenia, so he didn't feel he needed to
use meth,
but also, you know, gave him some hope and opportunity so that he didn't lose his music as well. And since then, he's moved into housing, and he's, you know, he had an eye problem, and he's got an eye surgery, and now he can see in both eyes. And then Donna, you know, who's the other client in prescribing hope, where, you know, she's been on the bus stop in Mo'ili'ili, sort of by the entrance of Waikiki at Kalakaua Avenue. There's a bus stop right out there next to 7-Eleven, and she was out there for also, you know, more than a decade. And, you know, she dug herself a hole, and she liked to stay dirty because she knew that that was the way to protect herself. No one would bother her if she was smelly and dirty, and that's how she lived her whole life. And, you know, these people, you know, they, unfortunately, we do not have government funds to assist us with this type of treatment and this type of help and the housing and the case management and the food and all these, you know, all this work that goes into one person. You know, it really does take the public, the private sector, excuse me, to really, you know, help advance solutions. And so, you know, while we definitely want people to be educated, we definitely need the resources to support, you know, advancement of homeless solutions. The other part that people can get involved with is volunteerism. And when I say volunteerism, you know, maybe more specialized volunteers. So, you know, that example I gave earlier where we take a client to court to get court ordered treatment, that requires a lot of research. That requires us going to the state hospital, to the Queens Medical Center, work with the homeless providers, gather all this documentation so that we can actually defend ourselves and why they meet the criteria to get court ordered treatment. And then they have to go, you know, petition that to court, and that requires fees and time. And so, you know, that's just, you know, one volunteer for one client. So there's specialized volunteer opportunities like lawyers. We also have a health services program, so we do need medical professionals. So if there's anybody out there who really wants to provide, you know, specialty services in any different area, from, you know, helping with children's enrichment, employment support services, just helping people build resumes to get jobs, or, you know, healthcare specialties. There's so many different opportunities. So really engage with us. Ask us, what can you do to help this homeless problem? But start with education. If you're educated and you really, you know, understand the problems and you understand the solutions, you will find a role in our community's effort to end homelessness.
That's some sobering stuff. IHSHawaii.org is their website, and you can learn a lot more when you get there. You can send them an email, info@ihs-hawaii.org. You can call them, 808-447-2800. You can get the full interview, the radio feature, all their contact information, all of our previous Helping Hand guests at hawaiipublicradio.org. Man, there's a whole different perspective on everything after hearing about that. And because you're a young guy, but that was, you're not that young. That was a long time, that one lady.
And it's, you know, it's very full circle for me, you know, to go from, you know, high school, seeing this, you know, kind of, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but, you know, when you're a high school, you're a student, and you're literally seeing this person be crazy, you think, wow, what a crazy lady. And, you know, here I am in this role as a spokesperson for our largest homeless service provider. And, you know, I think it really pulls at my heart a lot more, because it's not fair that here I am, you know, two decades later, I've gotten an education. I was able to develop a career. I've built friends and family. I have a beautiful life that I am very proud to have. And here's this lady two decades later who doesn't have any of that. And it's not fair. It's not fair that our community has allowed her to live this lifestyle. It's not fair that our system policies and, you know, laws have not advocated for her right to treatment. And I think that it really comes down to a lack of education and understanding of what this person needs to really survive and make it in this world. Was a middle-class citizen and resident of Hawaii. You know, she grew up in a beautiful family.
Born here.
Born and raised here.
Yeah.
And she's a child of immigrants. And she, you know, like many of our immigrant families, they had to work hard. And, you know, she unfortunately just suffered this mental illness. It wasn't something she chose. It wasn't something she asked for. It just developed when she was in her 20s. And after that, after getting an education and having friends, you know, her mental illness basically exacerbated to the point where it is today. And so here she is, you know, 20 plus years later.
Unbelievable.
And we have literally just allowed her to be, you know, in Chinatown on the streets living this way for forever.
Or across the street from the radio station.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I see her. I don't see her in Chinatown. And what to add to the desperation of what you're describing, I often see her chemo within a few feet of a fire station.
Yeah.
Like the people you depend on to come rescue you, you know, I mean, you hold firemen up at a real high level, right? They're paramedics, they're firemen.
First responders.
First responders, right? Yep. And that's where I see her. I don't see her at Chinatown. I mean, I see her right near a facility of one of our, within, you know, you could throw a rock and hit the fire thing.
So, you know, just maybe let's put this into a different context. Imagine a first responder, like a fireman, having all the resources, the training, everything to go into, you know, putting out a fire, but they can't because they can't access it.
Right.
And so they just have to let the building burn down.
So that's what you're saying about changing the policy.
That's basically the position we're in. Right. You know, we are, you know, train clinical homeless outreach providers. We have a medical doctor that is on staff, a psychiatric medical doctor that is able to prescribe medication. We, unfortunately, like that analogy, you know, we get stuck because, you know, we can't put out this fire because
the law is stopping.
The laws don't allow us to.
Well, there's a lot to think about. And in addition to the request for cash and for volunteering and stuff, a lot of it, like I said, I guess comes down to trying to effect some changes to make that happen and maybe earmark some dough for facilities that can cater to people with heavy psychiatric needs.
And it's not just our facilities, but it's also, you know, investing. You know, IHS, we're turning 40 years old this year, and, you know, we're celebrating an anniversary, but homelessness is not something to celebrate, frankly. And, you know, I think what we're trying to communicate, our message to the community is help us end chronic homelessness, because that really is where, you know, there's a lot of poverty, and we definitely care about the working poor, and we want to definitely help prevent a lot of homelessness. But really where, you know, I think in terms of laws and system policies that really exacerbate homelessness, we're really talking about the chronic homeless. So there's really these two different populations. There's those with capacity to make decisions and those without. And those without have really been given an unfair advantage. And I think that, you know, for IHS and looking, you know, at the populations we serve, we do serve both, but we are really focus on our goals for the next 5 years is to end chronic homelessness. And that really requires investments in us, you know, in myself and Connie Mitchell, our executive director, our staff, our psychiatrists, our homeless outreach program team. We don't just do services on the streets. We also go to the legislature every year to lobby for these policies. We actually have to test them in court. We have to, you know, I mean, it requires a lot of our time, and government doesn't fund that either. So, you know, I think what you're investing in are, you know, solutions to our community problems that really can affect and impact anybody.
Schema Carvalho, spokesperson for the Institute for Human Services, leader in the effort to help a lot of people who are homeless in the Aloha State, which is still the most severe homeless crisis per capita in the United States. Honor having you on Helping Hand. Thanks for educating me, sobering. Thanks for doing what you're doing, especially for people who really don't have anyone else to turn to. Thank you.
Thank you.